Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today we talk about raised beds. They can solve all kinds of problems in the garden. And we have with us author and YouTube host, Callie Kim. We're talking to her about her new book. It's titled Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. Any questions about planting, building, or filling a raised bed? Maybe you already have one and have questions about the one you have. Join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Kim, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry. I really appreciate it. I hope you're not getting too much snow out there.
No, today it looks pretty nice out there. Well, it's cold, but no snow, at least in southern Wisconsin. Plenty in the northern part of the state. Oh, man. Well, you weren't always a gardener, I don't think. Tell us how you got started.
Well, I actually grew up gardening. As a child, we had 5 acres and a family of 10 kids, believe it or not. And as you can imagine, our grocery bill was pretty high. So my parents put us all to work planting seeds, growing vegetables, and my mom canned and froze and preserved everything. But I love gardening now. But as a kid, as like a 7 or 8 year old kid, I had these endless rows of beans I had to pick, and I wasn't too excited about it. But as an adult, you know, you kind of come back to your roots sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And we had a couple of kids of our own, and I wanted my kids to enjoy the taste of those homegrown vegetables. And, you know, things, I didn't want to eat all the pesticides and chemicals on foods in the grocery store. So as an adult, I kind of got back into it and just really fell in love all over again with it.
How did you discover raised beds?
Well, we actually, our house is on a hill and that slopes down from our house. So there wasn't a lot of growing space to begin with, but we actually, crazy enough, we were on a backyard TV show. We lived here in Southern California, and they came out and actually digged some tiers into our hill, and then we ended up kind of making raised beds out of those tiers in order to be able to have more growing space. But even before that, I had planted a garden the year before, but just didn't have a lot of space to do it, and the raised beds allowed me extra space to be able to grow vegetables in a spot that I wouldn't normally be able to do it.
Yeah, that's a great benefit. What are the other benefits of raised beds?
I think one of my favorite benefits of all, and I've seen this over and over again, is that you can really control the soil that goes into your raised beds. You can plant it pack full of all kinds of great, you know, high fertility types of soil, which makes your vegetables just grow that much easier. So no matter how much space you have, big yard, small yard, no yard at all, you can plant and fill a raised bed to fit your space and grow vegetables no matter where you live.
I really like your book a lot. Maybe tell us a bit about it. What did you want to accomplish with it?
I think what I just mentioned, I think, is really kind of my goal is a lot of people think I don't have space to grow vegetables. And really through this book, I wanted to explain and really give people the nitty gritty and the tools that they need to grow vegetables no matter where they live, no matter if they have a small garden, a big garden, and really make it doable for people. You don't have to, have a lot of experience or even know how to, you know, have a lot of construction skills in order to be able to build and grow in a raised bed. So just to get it out there, keep it simple. That's kind of my garden motto, just start simple, and then you can expand and grow from there. So really just to make it accessible and easy for anyone to grow vegetables.
I really like the book. The photos and then the instructions are easy to follow.
Wonderful. That was exactly my goal. The photos actually were taken all by my family. My husband also works with me in our business, our gardening business, and he took a lot of the photos, as well as my daughter. She's a photographer, and I took some of the photos as well. So it was really fun to work on this book as a family and then see how it came out and hear all the wonderful stories about people who are able to grow their vegetables as a result.
So you say in the book we need to plan before we jump into a raised bed gardening. What's the first thing to ask yourself?
Well, I really encourage people to ask themselves how much time do they have to devote to a vegetable garden, because that's really going to determine how many raised beds that you build or plant. So, you know, if you're a very busy person and maybe just have a few hours a week, you might want to just plant one or two raised beds. If you've got lots of time and you have lots of space, you might want to plant 8 to 10 raised beds. But you definitely want to consider the time that you have and the space that you have. And also, if you want to kind of just mainly supplement your, you know, your grocery budget or going to the grocery store, supplement with your food, or if you really want to be self-sufficient. So that will really determine how many raised beds you build and whether you're going to build them in a small space or really, you know, in a large space.
Yeah, and the size, within your book, you talk about raised beds of a number of different sizes, actually, and types.
Absolutely. That's the wonderful thing about raised beds is you can really customize it to fit your space or your growing conditions. So, you can build a 2x4 raised bed, which is a fairly small size. If you've got like a deck or a patio, you don't even have to have a grassy area or a backyard, a typical backyard. You grow a small raised bed on a deck or a patio. Or if you don't want to bend over, if you've got back issues, or maybe you just want to save your knees or your back, or maybe you're a person with disabilities and is not able to, you know, get down in the garden, you can build a higher one or an elevated one to fit whatever needs or whatever space that you have. So it's really, raised beds really make gardening accessible for anyone and easy for anyone to grow in.
Emily in Appleton, Wisconsin, emailed us to ask if you can talk about raised garden bags. She's thinking using two or three of these 50-gallon bags for... Or she's been thinking of using them for a couple of years.
Absolutely. Those are actually one of my favorite things to grow in. If you don't want to take the time to build a raised bed, pop-up raised beds or fabric raised beds are a super easy way to grow. They take minutes to pop up. I use a brand called Smart Pots, and the fabric is super durable. It's aerated, and it comes all folded up in a package, so it's very compact. You can pack it away in the wintertime if you don't want to have it out in the garden. But literally, you just pop it up, fill it with soil, and plant your vegetables. And you can install drip irrigation if you want. But it's a super easy way, especially if you're growing in a small space. They come in all kinds of different shapes, colors, sizes. Really, the sky's the limit with that. So I'd say if you're looking for super, super simple and quick, that's definitely a great way to grow.
Well, let's talk about some of the other options for the material you use to build the beds. Treated wood, an option or not?
Well, the wood that's treated these days is a lot safer than how it was treated in the old times. If you want to completely stay away from treated wood, treated wood will last you longer. But if you want to completely stay away from treated wood, there's all kinds out there on the market. So you just kind of have to, see what's important to you, what matters to you. If that's not an issue for you, then go ahead and get the treated wood. I myself prefer to use untreated wood. There's lots of very durable types of woods that will last you for years. So, you could also use like those concrete blocks. You could use a composite wood if you don't ever have to, need to worry about it decomposing or breaking down over time. There's so many different options out there. And in my book, I detail out kind of the pros and cons of each. So then you can make the decision what works best for your situation.
Yeah, and I like how you have photos that show the plants growing within the various options. So you can kind of see how it looks and how it might look in your own backyard.
Sure. Yeah. It's always great to visualize. We're all very visual people. And I love not only seeing the written words, but seeing the pictures too. And that was one of our goals with the book, is just to make it super visual, super colorful, just really fun for people to look at and read, even for kids to flip through and just look at the pictures.
Yeah, it really is. And, in the end, all those photos, along with some good writing, inspire. I think they're kind of inspirational. By the time you're done looking through the book, you think, oh, I got to do this.
Well, thank you. That was exactly my goal. I really want to encourage people to do it and really be their cheerleader. That's what our YouTube channel is all about, our books are all about, and all the products we have on our website. We just want to be able to make it easy for people and let people know that you can do it.
Should we line the beds?
You know, again, that's really an individual decision. It kind of depends where you're putting it. For example, if you're placing it on concrete, you may not necessarily need to line it because you're not having a lot of weeds come through. But if you're placing it on an area where you might have weeds coming through, I always line the bottom of my beds if I'm placing it on soil or a grassy area. My initial layer I put down is cardboard just to smother the weeds. And it really helps kill the weeds and helps prevent them from coming through into your soil. If you're planting a raised bed that might have some, you know, little cracks in it or something like that, you may want to lay down like a landscape fabric or something like that just to prevent the soil from running out, especially if it's an elevated raised bed. So, you know, in my book, I talk about liners and then kind of give some guidelines as to whether or not you want to put a liner in the particular bed that you're building. Of course, the fabric raised beds are easy. They already have that built right in there. And because they have good aeration and drainage in the fabric, the water will drain right through, which you really need for your vegetables, and also helps aerate the roots. So the roots, you know, get more oxygen, and it helps you grow more vegetables as well.
Joe in Washburn emailed a question relating something we were sort of talking about. He would not use treated lumber. For him, that's out of the question. He's thinking about using pine or oak and then burning the outside surface of the boards prior to installation. Japanese builders do this all the time to increase the life of boards exposed to harsh elements of weather and below-grade applications. Would charring create any kind of negative effect in his soil? And any other suggestions for long-lasting construction materials related to the perimeter enclosure?
You know, I've never done the charring situation that you're talking about, so I really can't speak from experience to that. I don't see it causing a lot of big problems, but that would be definitely something if he's looking into, he would want to, you know, do some more research on for that. But I've used pine. For most of my raised beds are out of pine or Douglas fir, which are very long-lasting. I've had some last, you know, 10 years or more. Now, granted, we don't live in a super humid climate. If you live in a climate where you get lots of moisture, we've gotten a ton this year in Southern California, but typically we don't, then you want to maybe look into some more sturdy woods like cedar that will be more longer lasting. But if you want to totally stay away from treated, then, you know, definitely look into those other options like that and, you know, research it and find out if that's going to work best for you. I always tell people experiment. You know, play around with things, see what works best for you, and then you can always adjust as you go. If your experiment didn't work, there's no failures, there's only learning opportunities. So it always is a great way to learn.
Kelly Kim, our guest today, her book is titled Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Know and Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. Questions for her, you can give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Kelly Kim. Kim's the author of the book Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. And so we can talk about raised beds. She has, of course, knows a lot about vegetables as well, so you could ask your vegetable questions too. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Tim in Hollandale, we'll go to you. Tim, thanks for calling.
Hi. I just had a comment. I had me and a couple friends were in construction, so a lot of times we'll build stuff out of old construction, like barn barn boards work good. Old roofing barn tin, that works good for the sides. And then I know you had a question from a lady about 50-gallon garbage bags. Last year I grew potatoes and two tomato plants in the 50-gallon garbage bags. So they were good, too. So,
Sam, thanks for calling. Comment, Kim.
I think it's great if you can find some ways to repurpose wood. It kind of gives your garden a really fun, kind of whimsical look if you're using that old barn wood. And, of course, it saves you money, saves the environment. So any way you can repurpose, I'm all for that. And, again, like experimenting with 50-gallon garbage bags is absolutely wonderful. If you can grow food, any way you can grow food, especially these days, and save on your grocery bill, I'm all for. So way to go, Tim. Way to be innovative and creative with how you're growing.
Yes, absolutely. Betsy in St. Paul, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Betsy.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
Yes, I was just wondering if the host had any tips on growing kumquats.
Kumquats.
I have actually never grown kumquats. So that would, again, be something to experiment with, do your research on, and find out how to grow it. Grow them, but, man, they are just delicious, so go for it.
Okay. Betsy, thanks for calling. Gene in Ironwood, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Yeah. Hi, Larry.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I was on Facebook the other day on Marketplace just scrolling through to see where I could waste my money buying stuff. And anyway, there's a guy in Wisconsin is building raised beds out of 55-gallon barrels, food-grade barrels, and he builds 2x4 framework to set them in. He used treated wood, but I suppose you could use anything. And I was just wondering if that would be a good idea, because he makes them 2-foot-high and 3-foot-high, you know, different heights for people who have different, you know,
abilities.
Whatever they want as far as height.
Yeah. 55-gallon drums. Food grade.
Wow. I love it. I love hearing all these creative ideas. And I'd say, again, definitely experiment. Go for it. You do want to make sure. It sounds like he's planting directly in the food barrels and then supporting them with the landscape timbers or what have you.
Yeah.
I would definitely make sure that you drill plenty of holes in the bottom of those for drainage. You want your plants to have plenty of drainage. And if he's putting them right on soil, you could even knock out the bottom of those if that's possible to do without splitting the barrel. But definitely put drainage in it and fill it with a really good, well-draining soil, which I have lots of soil recipes in my book. Because you don't want those plants to get waterlogged in a plastic barrel like that. You know, that's always that potential. Or to get overheated. So lots of holes, even holes possibly in the sides, depending on how he's situating the barrels and the location that he has them in. But, wow, what a fun way to grow food.
Yeah. Gene, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, you can join in, too. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas at WPR.org. Jeannie emailed to say that chipmunks, squirrels, and rabbits are terrible for him. Anything he grows is quickly ravaged by critters. Does he just need to encase the raised beds in fine netting? Determined chipmunks seem to get past all security measures. So he wonders if you have any great ideas.
That is a tough one. I'd say that's probably the biggest issue that I hear from gardeners all over the world is squirrels and chipmunks, particularly. Somewhat rabbits, but those squirrels and chipmunks are super persistent and very aggressive. What I do, you know, I do encase a lot of my containers and raised beds, or not so much my raised beds, but some of my special plants I'll wrap in netting or the tulle fabric, which is kind of like a netting fabric, but it's very inexpensive. You can get it at most fabric and craft stores. So I'll do that for some of my special plants. Unfortunately, I can't do that for my whole entire garden. I know that I have a friend who lives near me, kind of in the hills, has a huge squirrel problem, and he ended up pretty much building a fence around his garden. So if it's a huge, huge issue, or if deer are an issue, that's something to consider. I realize that is an investment. However, you can also spray make a, you know, kind of DIY spray out of hot peppers. you know, boil them, even throw some garlic in there because they don't like the smell of like garlic, hot peppers, anything you can think of that, you know, is hot and spicy. Throw in there, boil it down, make a kind of a hot pepper DIY spray, and then spray it in those areas where the squirrels or the chipmunks or the critters might visit. It's not a guarantee, but at least it'll help deter, and maybe along with your other tool and netting, you know, deterrence, it will help keep them away so you have some more vegetables for yourself.
Ted and Spooner back. Ted, hi, you've got something about those drums, that the 55-gallon drums.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. Them 55-gallon drums, if you cut them in half, they're kind of deep. If you cut them long ways, you got less dirt and more room to plant stuff.
All right. So he cuts the drums sideways.
Great idea. Great idea. I love hearing all these ideas flow around.
How much depth do you need for, you know, most of these raised beds in terms of the soil?
Well, it really kind of depends on what you're planting. The typical raised bed is probably about 12 inches high. If you're placing it on top of soil of some kind, then, you know, a lot of times those really aggressive roots can get down in the roots into the soil a little bit deeper. I personally like to plant mine a little bit deeper, or to build mine a little bit deeper, maybe 2 to 3 feet high. It kind of depends, again, on the space that you have and the type of vegetables that you're growing. There are some vegetables that have very deep roots, like tomatoes, watermelon, that really enjoy the deeper amounts of soil. But if you're growing things that have shallower roots, like lettuce, greens, herbs, then a nice shallow raised bed will do just fine. And I have some great guidelines there in my book on the type of vegetables you're planting and the ideal depth for raised beds for those particular vegetables. So it's all in there for you.
Nancy in Appleton, we'll go to you. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I am just asking about raised beds.
Okay.
I try to do organic gardening, buying organic seeds, trying to use organic fertilizer or whatever. And I want to go to raised beds, but I'm concerned about the materials. I don't know how to get materials that would also be safe and more organic for raised beds.
Well, Nancy, the fabric raised beds that I use are actually specifically designed for growing vegetables. They're made by Smart Pots, and they are a completely safe way to grow vegetables. However, if you want to build a raised bed, you know, a lot of the woods out there, you know, the chances that any of, you know, first of all, don't buy treated wood if you're really concerned about that. But, you know, you're buying wood that, you know, like pine and Douglas fir and things like that. And the exposure as far as that goes to your vegetables is minimal. And you're going to be absolutely just fine. But if it is a concern for you, I would go with those fabric raised beds that are specifically designed for, you know, for growing vegetables.
And you can take a look at those fabric raised beds in Kim's book as well. You've got them in here.
Yes, they're in my book. I also have some on my website at kellykimgardenandhome.com.
kellykimgardenandhome.com.
Abby. Yes. Garden and home.
Okay, I want to make sure I had that right.
Sure.
Nancy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jackie lives in northern Minnesota and has 7 raised garden beds made out of railroad ties. They're perfect because I can sit on them and reach halfway across and weed or pick produce. I know that she has to plant 8 to 10 inches from the edge because of the wood treatment. The two questions she has is how often do you fertilize, and how do you keep bees from nesting in the ties?
Oh, wow. Okay. I haven't had that that issue. As far as fertilizing goes, I really like to fertilize my vegetables in raised beds, I'd say every 3 to 4 weeks or so. And I use I actually put some granular fertilizer along with compost in the soil at the time of planting, because that's a slow-release fertilizer. I use worm castings, organic fertilizer, and then the compost to kind of slowly release nutrients over the growing season. And then I will feed with a liquid fertilizer, which will be immediately released to the plants at planting time. And then about once a month or so, I'll fertilize again with that liquid fertilizer, because you really want to keep the plants fed and happy. It's kind of like us. If we don't eat, we get tired, we don't do as well. Same thing with the plants. Once they're producing, you want to really keep them going and happy through the growing season. And I do have a whole fertilizer schedule of how I prefer to fertilize in my book, too. So it lays it all out for you, so you don't have to wonder, like, oh, my goodness, when do I fertilize my plants and what do I use? It's all in there for you to keep your plants happy, healthy, and giving you lots of veggies.
Okay. And if you have a question, join in, 800-642-1234, the number to call, or email to ideas@WPR.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Lyric in Blanchardville, and she's calling in relation to the wood that you could use for raised beds. And she mentions that black locust has been recommended to her. It can last up to 90 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. I have not ever used black locust or done a lot of research on it. But, man, if that works for you, more power to you, I'd say go for it. You know, just do your research so you know exactly what you're planting and you know, so you're dissatisfied with that wood. And you always want to kind of stick to, you know, also evaluate what's your budget, because a lot of woods are a lot more expensive. So it could be, because it lasts so long, it's going to be a lot more costly. Whereas some of the woods, like a Douglas fir or a pine, are more cost effective, won't last as long. But, you know, you kind of balance out the pros and cons and then see what works best for you.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about soil, but just sort of in general terms, it's probably maybe the most important element to a raised bed.
Definitely.
So what do you normally suggest we would use?
Well, yeah, soil is probably one of the biggest investments you're going to make in your raised bed garden, but it's definitely one of the most important, because I've made the mistake in my early gardening years of using cheap soil or free soil that was advertised on, you know, Facebook Marketplace or what have you, and it honestly didn't work out well. So cheapest isn't always the best. You have a couple different options for soil. You can make your own, which to me is the most cost effective. There's lots of, you know, great ingredients you can put in your soil, but it's not always the most convenient. Or you can buy bagged soil, which is super convenient, but again, it's a lot more expensive. You can spend a lot of money on bagged raised bed soil. So I really like to make sure that the soil has a really good balance of aeration, lots of airflow through the soil so it doesn't get bogged down and, you know, turn into clay. You want it to have, on the other hand, moisture retention so your vegetables don't dry out. But at the same time, you need to have a good balance of nutrients. So a soil that has a good balance of all three of these elements will be great soil that's going to grow you tons of veggies. So in my book, I've got several DIY recipes. If you're starting out on a budget, I really recommend that if you've got some topsoil, which is like the top of the layer of soil in your backyard, you kind of dig up some of that and then mix it with some other ingredients that will give you a really quality nutrient soil. If you don't have topsoil in your garden, you can always purchase bagged topsoil, which is fairly inexpensive, and then combine it with ingredients like compost, worm castings, and to really bulk that soil up and give it that nutrient-dense quality that you need to plant your vegetables in.
Yeah.
But again, lots of DIY recipes in my book. So depending on the ingredients that you have available to you, there's a recipe in there for you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, when you're mixing, what do you do, like half and half? Or?
Well, I've got the recipes laid out in for the topsoil recipe. What you can do, too, is just make it right in your bed. You can, you know, or in a wheelbarrow, you can dump it in your bed, like say maybe about half full or so with topsoil, and then add another half full of compost. Put in some worm castings on the top, several bags of worm castings, mix it together, and then you're pretty much ready to plant after that. However, rather than filling the bed entirely up with soil, you can definitely save some money by filling up the bottom, I'd say maybe third or so, with, like, if you've cut some branches down in your yard, you can throw the branches in. If you've got some leaves that you've been saving, you can throw those in. So you're kind of bulking up the bed with some materials, so you don't have to use as much soil. And then what happens is, over time, those materials compost and break down, you're also adding nutrients to your garden bed, and you're saving yourself on soil at the same time. Now, keep in mind that will cause your soil to settle. So the next planting year, growing season, you'll want to be topping that off with some fresh nutrients, which you'd want to do anyway to give your plants some good nutrients to grow in.
Let's go to Rick in Waukesha next. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question. I have an old animal horse trough that's made out of aluminum that I'd like to use for a raised bed. Do I need to wash it out, clean it out with bleach and water, or soap and water? Do I need to take any precautions like that? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks, Rick. I would definitely clean it out. Bleach, soap and water, whatever you have available to get it nice and clean. And then you do want to make sure that you drill some holes in the bottom for drainage. Super important. If you don't have holes for drainage, your plants are going to rot. And there you go. You've got a raised bed and you didn't even have to spend any money on it. So way to go.
How many, you know, like hole, when we talk about holes, you know,
sure.
dime size holes, and how many would you put like per square yard, let's say?
Sure. I would say, yeah, in a bed that size, you could do, you wouldn't necessarily have to do dime size holes. You could do like, you know, maybe quarter inch mm-hmm. holes. I would probably drill them every probably 3 to 4 inches along the bottom of the raised bed. There's no like set recipe for that. Again, it's like experiment and do what works for you. And really, no matter what you do, as long as you're following some general guidelines and general principles, I know you and I live in totally different areas and climates, but as long as you're following the general principles of growing, you're going to be able to grow vegetables no matter where you live.
Rick, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Marty emailed to ask how close you plant your vegetable plants. Can you do it closer than what the seed packets say?
I say yes, you can. I like, especially in raised beds, because you're filling your raised beds with nutrient-dense soil. And the same thing goes for the fabric raised beds. Because of the aeration that the fabric raised beds provide, the plants don't get root-bound in those. They're still able to take up the nutrients, the water, in order to grow and be really strong and healthy for you. So, you know, there's so many different vegetables, so I can't really give, you know, just one set answer for that. But it really does depend on the vegetable that you're growing. Larger vegetables, such as tomatoes, I'm always pushing the envelope on that. A lot of people say 2 to 3 feet. I'll plant mine like, you know, a foot and a half or so apart. But try and, if you do plant them closer together, you do want to make sure that you are definitely fertilizing on a regular schedule, especially those vegetables that require, that are heavy feeders, what they're called. They're power producers. They produce a lot of vegetables. So you're going to have to make sure that you do keep that fertilizing schedule really regular. And actually, in the back of my book, I have a whole chart on intensive planting to help you figure out if you do want to plant closer together or plant intensively. It kind of gives a guideline on how close you can actually put different vegetables.
You tell a funny story. Yeah, you tell a funny story in the back of your book about the first time that you with tomatoes.
Oh, yes. Yes, my very first year gardening at our house here. It was my first time gardening as an adult. You get your baby vegetable, your baby seedlings, and they're tiny. And you think, oh, I'm just going to put those about 6 inches apart. But, you know, you kind of forget that they grow. And you want your garden bed to look really nice when you plant it. But they grow, and they're just, it was crazy. I had a tomato jungle. I had, like, a little rat family living in there. And there were all kinds of things. But you know what? I learned from it. I got a ton of tomatoes that year. And it really was a lot of fun. It was a fun story to tell, too.
It had to be. Callie Kim, our guest today, as we're talking raised beds and vegetables with her. Kim is an organic gardener, and her book is Raised Bed Gardening, all the know-how you need to build and grow a raised bed garden. Questions for her about raised beds or about vegetables? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Callie Kim, an organic, urban organic gardener, and her book is titled Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. So we're talking with her about those raised beds and, of course, vegetables. You can take your vegetable questions as well at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Kathy in northern Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Been listening to your show for a very long time. Got a lot of good information. And the raised beds, I do. I've got the bags. But also a question, I do the hay bale. Wondering if you could break down your hay bale to start your raised garden.
Kathy, I prefer not to use hay in my garden beds because hay has a lot of weed seeds. So it's not my favorite way to do that. I know it's a very popular to grow in straw bales, which is different than hay. It doesn't have the weed seeds. So if you have that option to get straw bales rather than hay, I would definitely recommend that. There's also lots of great shredded straw type products on the market, but straw bales are very inexpensive. And that would be a good thing to kind of lay down on the bottom of your raised bed. I wouldn't necessarily fill it, like a third full, like I mentioned, with the leaves and twigs and branches and things like that, because it will tend to get compacted. But you can use a layer of on the bottom, but then definitely layer it with some other materials to give it some aeration. And straw is a really good thing also to mulch the top of your raised beds with. It works better if you can kind of shred it up somehow, like with your lawnmower or with a weed whacker, in a trash can, wearing safety glasses, of course, to protect your eyes. But it's great to use for mulch to really help retain the water or to help your vegetables stay warmer if you're planting them or growing them during the cooler months.
There you go, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, on to you now. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just caught, there are two things I'd like to mention. Just very briefly, we have a kumquat tree in our greenhouse, and it is currently producing a huge crop of kumquats. And the one thing I'd like to mention about that is if you're growing a kumquat tree, let them get really ripe because then they're very sweet and delicious. And the main thing that I called in about is I would like to describe the raised beds that we made. And we discovered just by chance, we were building along our lot line, and our neighbor had planted a cedar hedge along the lot line, and we did not want the cedar roots to grow into the raised beds. And so what we did was we're working on a large scale, 2 feet. 4 feet wide by 2 feet high, and the first two beds were 40 feet long.
And wow.
And what we did was we lined them with a heavy-duty pond liner, completely lined the boxes. So that way we were able to use treated lumber because it never comes into contact with the soil. And inadvertently, and we filled about two-thirds full with washed river sand, and then the top third with a mixture of topsoil and compost. And there is a drainage and an emergency overflow hole at each end of the box. One hole, it's about 6 inches up from the bottom, and it's maybe about quarter sized or so, and it turns out, we found out, because of the pond liner and the sand, that we have built gigantic self-watering growing beds.
Oh.
Interesting. Wow. It was kind of a discovery by accident, but you experimented with something, and it turned out great. And I'm sure you're probably making adjustments as you go, but that's the beauty of There's no one way to garden. There's different growing conditions, different materials available to you, and you absolutely made the best out of it, and it turned out wonderful. Those beds sound beautiful.
Yeah. Stella, thank you so much. Water does come to mind. And there are, you know, with smaller raised beds or under different conditions, you're going to maybe need more water or regular watering, perhaps more so than if you were just relying on rain.
Absolutely. If you live in an area where you get lots of rain, you're very fortunate. But most of us, well, especially, Southern California, we don't always have that luxury. So for me personally, and I recommend this to a lot of people, even if you do live in a more, wetter or more humid climate, is to install drip irrigation. Now, a lot of people get a little bit intimidated when they hear that, but really consistent watering is the key to growing vegetables. If you're going to take the time to really, build your raised beds, plant your vegetables, you want to put food on your table for your family, I highly recommend it. It's not near as bad as a lot of people think. There's so many easy kits and things out there on the market to really help you get started that have all the different parts included. And I've got detailed instructions, detailed videos on our YouTube channel, actually detailed instructions in my first book called Organic Gardening for Everyone. But that's just a little series of hoses that you wind throughout your garden bed. You can hook it up to, if you've got a sprinkler system or even just a hose bib, and set it on a timer. So you just set it and forget it. And then you can kind of adjust the time or the frequency of watering according to the season. Mine is pretty much turned off right now because we have had so much rain. But in the summertime, in the heat of the summer, you can adjust the frequency that you water, and you can even go on vacation, and you don't have to worry about watering your garden bed. Just being a busy person and, working full time, having kids, you just don't always get out there to water your garden. So drip irrigation is a great way to just set it and forget it and to guarantee that your vegetables will get the water they need to be productive. So it saves my garden. And I know a lot of people are really enjoying the benefits of drip irrigation too.
Well, the other advantage is that then the water is coming in from below and not spraying the leaves of the plants, so your likelihood Absolutely. Of disease is lessened.
Definitely. Yeah, that's definitely something to consider, to try and get your water at the roots of your plants when you can, and that's definitely a huge benefit of drip. Besides being a water saver, it gets the water right to where your plants need it the most, sinks down into the roots, rather than watering the leaves, which can cause diseases, bring the pests in, just harbor like powdery mildew and different diseases that might attack your garden. So lots of benefits to that.
Perry in Reedstown, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Perry. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question about raised beds. What do you suggest to put around the raised bed as a way of keeping the weeds down if it's in a already prepared soil? If the soil that you're putting the raised beds in has already been tilled in the past, what
okay.
do you put down between the raised beds?
In between the raised beds. Okay. What I would do is in between the raised beds, if you're making you're referring to like a pathway in between that you could access the raised beds from, correct?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Right, Perry? Okay. Great. What I would do is I would lay down some cardboard to kind of smother those weeds out.
Okay,
and then
cardboard.
And then I would put something down on top of that cardboard to make it more aesthetically pleasing. You're going to be walking in around your raised bed. You're going to be enjoying your garden. So I would put down, I prefer to use like a cedar wood chip in my pathways. Those are actually very inexpensive to buy bagged. At your local garden center, or you can buy them in bulk from a landscape company in your area. If that doesn't work for you, you could also use like river rock or something like that, just to line those pathways with to keep the weeds down. And your garden is going to be someplace that you're going to be sitting and enjoying yourself and working out there. So you definitely want it to be something that's very aesthetically pleasing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Perry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's turn to Al in Manitowoc next. Hi, Al.
Good morning, Larry. So I have two questions. One is, how do you recommend protecting climbing plants like tomatoes from when they're ripening from being attacked by squirrels or chipmunks? And number two is, can I use used potting soil from plants as kind of the base in a raised bed, and then put the regular mixture of actual growing soil on top of that?
Okay, great. Squirrels, yeah, are definitely always a big problem in the garden. And actually, referred to this question a little bit earlier, is some of my special plants I will wrap in like a tulle or a netting to kind of keep the squirrels away. But you can also make a DIY like hot pepper spray. They don't like the smell of that. It will irritate them and they'll hopefully leave. Not a guarantee, but hopefully with those two deterrents, you can kind of keep things at bay there for the squirrels and chipmunks. And your second question referring to using used potting mix, absolutely. Your soil is your biggest investment, whether you're growing in containers, in raised beds, or in your in-ground garden. You never want to throw it away. I reuse my soil over and over. But the key is to really refresh that. And just like you're doing, adding fresh nutrients every time you plant. But that used potting soil is a great base for your raised bed soil mix for sure.
Yeah. Al, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chuck emailed to ask the kind of protection from the bottom side of raised bed to protect from burrowing animals. And we talked a little about this, but it probably bears repeating.
Sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of people will lay down. We don't have a big issue with like groundhogs or things like that. But a lot of people will lay down that it's called hardware cloth, hardware fabric. It's actually like a mesh type of wire fencing with small, tiny holes. We'll lay that down in the bottom of their raised beds to help prevent the groundhogs from digging up and pulling out your vegetables from the bottom. Because that's very disconcerting. I've had friends actually see that happen, and that's crazy. So that will really help go a long way towards deterring those pesky creatures.
Yeah, it looks like something, if you actually see it, it looks like something out of a cartoon, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Pretty disconcerting when you work so hard to get those vegetables to grow and they're gone.
Arlen emailed to ask if AC2 treated lumber, so A, capital C, number two, treated lumber is okay for raised beds.
I'm not familiar with that particular type of lumber, and I don't typically use treated lumber, but I definitely recommend doing your research. From what I have researched, the lumber that is treated these days is a lot safer than, you know, back 20 or 30 years ago. But do your research if that's a concern for you, and use whatever you're comfortable with.
And a listener emailed to ask if you approved of using decaying fall leaves as mulch in a raised garden bed. If so, what are the benefits?
Absolutely. In fact, leaves are one of my favorite free resources to use in the garden. Whether you're composting them, breaking them down into free fertilizer for your garden beds, or what I typically do is I've got a pile of leaves and I'll dig from the bottom of that when I'm actually filling my raised beds, because that's where it's broken down the most, is on the bottom, and mix that into my soil. The benefits of leaves are so many. Number one, they add, you know, organic matter to your soil, they add aeration to your soil. They're kind of like nature's gift to us. So when you look out in the forest, the leaves fall, things grow underneath the trees, and we're kind of just mimicking nature by using leaves in our garden. So you can mix them into your soil. You can also use them as a mulch on top of your soil, which is one of my favorite things to do with them. Even throughout the winter time, when the wind is blowing really hard, you know, just kind of helps prevent erosion. And even in the summertime when it's hot, it will help the moisture retention of your soil tremendously if you mulch with shredded leaves or any type of mulch, really. But shredded leaves, since they're free, are a great natural resource for us to use. I think, though, one of the biggest benefits that I love about leaves is that the worms absolutely love them. So if you add leaves to your garden, if you've got, you know, some heavy compacted soil, you could mix leaves in, pretty soon you're going to see those worms come in. When the worms are eating the leaves, they're also depositing their waste, which is called worm castings, which is one of the best natural organic fertilizers that you can possibly have. And worms aerate the soil. There's just so many benefits of having worms in your garden. So anything you can do to bring in the worms is a huge, huge benefit to your garden soil.
Yes, know many people who actually in their neighborhoods will go around in the fall when the leaves, everybody puts their leaves out by the street. They go around and pick up the neighbor's leaves and drag them over to their own house.
Absolutely. It's a free resource, so why not take advantage of it? A lot of people don't garden, or maybe they don't want their leaves. So great way to make use of your free natural resources.
And then run a lawnmower over them or something.
Absolutely.
To get them shredded. Callie Kim is our guest today, an organic gardener. Her latest book is Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. And, of course, her YouTube, is a great YouTubes, Callie Kim Garden and Home DIY. Talking with us on Garden Talk today, I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're focusing on raised bed gardening on the show today. And our guest is Callie Kim. She is a Southern California urban organic gardener. She teaches people really all over the world how to grow their own food through her YouTube channel. It's Callie Kim Garden and Home DIY. And her new book is what we're talking about today. Or focusing a bit on, at least. It's called Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. So are you looking for maybe beginner-friendly veggies for your raised beds? Do you have questions about fertilizing, watering? Love to hear from you. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And we have open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly. So I hope you will join in. Kim, many vegetables grow on vines, of course, and I know you use and talk about trellising in your book. Tell us a bit about trellising and your favorite materials.
Sure, yeah. Trellising is actually a great way to grow vegetables if you don't have a lot of space. You can grow up instead of out. So if you're space challenged, you definitely want to use trellises. Not only that, though, it's really a healthier way to grow because the vegetables have more air. And, you know, it kind of does help cut down on the critters and the pests because your vegetables aren't sprawling all over the ground. So I use trellises whenever I can, just so I can fit more in a smaller amount of space. And there's all kinds of different things you can use for trellises. Really, the sky's the limit. And I always encourage people, look around your house, look around your yard, in your garden shed. See what you have that you can grow up on, and don't limit it just to a trellis that you buy from the garden store, the garden center. One of my favorite is whenever we trim our trees in the backyard, I love to use tree branches as trellises. And I've got one right now that I actually tie together in kind of a ladder type of shape, tie it together with twine, kind of where the pieces of wood cross. And then it gives a really nice organic kind of whimsical look to your garden. It's really fun. It's really pretty. And it lasts a very long time. And then I'll use that in my raised beds. If you don't have trees in your backyard, you can use a lot of people. I've heard people using like old shelves that they might have, like slatted shelves, even crib, the size of crib beds. to stick in your raised beds and use for trellises for your vegetables to climb on. But if you are a little more ambitious and want to build a trellis, I've got several different trellis plans that you can easily build in my book on raised bed gardening. One of my favorites is just made out of poultry wire. So poultry wire is very inexpensive, and out of fence flaps, which are also very inexpensive. You can grab those things at the garden center and follow the directions in my book. You're basically just attaching the poultry wire and spacing your fence flaps a certain distance apart, depending on the size of your raised bed, and then putting it in your raised bed, filling it with soil, and it adds a really nice little trellis for your cucumbers, or even just a little secure area that you can tie up your pepper plants or for your tomatoes to kind of climb up and you know, just keep them up off the ground. So all kinds of different ways to do it.
And we should probably mention again, we went through this kind of really early in the show about your book, and maybe I think it's worth describing again for our listeners what's in your book, Raised Bed Gardening.
Sure. It's all the know-how you need to build a raised bed garden. So if you've never, ever started, it's particularly geared for first-time gardeners. So if you want to grow vegetables, this is the book for you, no matter how much or how little space you have. You can grow in raised beds, whether you build your own, whether you grab yourself some fabric raised beds and pop them up. And there's all kinds of ways to save money in there, from DIY soil recipes. I love to detail things out step by step, because my goal is to make it simple for anybody to get started. So we've got step-by-step soil recipes, how to fill your raised bed, as well as one of my favorite sections in the back is the planting plans. So, you know, when you first start gardening, you have no idea what to plant, no idea what to grow, or how far apart you should space your vegetables. So towards the back of the book, there's 10 planting plans that give some guidelines, whether you want to grow a kitchen garden with some very basic vegetables, or whether you want to grow a theme garden like a pizza garden, a salsa garden, or a kids garden, or just grow yourself some salad greens. So there's all types of different suggested garden plants. So you can pick one or two, just start simple, and get your feet wet with a little bit, get some vegetables to harvest on your table, and it's all there for you and makes it really simple for you to grow your own vegetables.
It does indeed, and I want to talk about them a bit more, but let's take some calls here. Dot in Manitowoc, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dot.
Hi. Nice to speak to you. What I have used is old bed springs. Maybe you can find them at the thrift stores, or if somebody's throwing out their bedding springs, you can use that as a trellis. And, of course, they're black, but you could spray paint them any color to make it more visible or to make it more prettier, as they say.
Sure.
Wonderful. Well,
bed springs. Have you ever used bed springs, Kim?
I never have, but I've heard lots of people doing that, and I love what Dot said about going to thrift stores. That's a wealth of gardening supplies there at your thrift stores. You can find all kinds of things. And once you start gardening, you start looking at things through a gardener's mindset. You start to think like a gardener. So when you go to those thrift stores, see an old crib, think, I could use that for a trellis. Or you see like one of those wire shelves, I could use that for a trellis. So I love what she's doing and repurposing, you know, being environmentally friendly and keeping it very budget friendly as well. Nice job.
I think it looked pretty cool too. All right, good.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, man. Doug in Minocqua, let's go to you. Hi, Doug. Doug, are you there?
We're here. Yeah, hi, sorry. We have a limited amount of sunlight because of the wooded lot that we're in. We only get about 6 hours of direct light. So my question is there particular types of vegetables that we should be focused on that would do well with only about 6 hours?
Absolutely. I would choose greens mainly, and you can find greens that will grow at different times of the year. For example, in the in the cooler months, you want to grow your lettuces that are more best suited to grow in cooler temperatures. And those do very well on 4 to 6 hours of sunlight a day. They grow in partial shade, partial sun, whichever way you want to look at it. And then in the summertime, when those hot temperatures come in, plant yourself some heat-tolerant greens such as kale and chard, collards, things like that that will do well in the hot temperatures. You also probably want to pop in some herbs in there, because a lot of herbs, even warm weather herbs like basil, will lack a little bit of filtered sunlight, or will do well in 6 hours. They don't always do quite as well in the super, super hot, blazing sun all day long. And then also grow smaller, more compact vegetables, such as a cherry tomato, a smaller variety of tomato that don't need quite as many hours of sunlight as a larger variety to ripen and produce for you. So you might not get quite as many tomatoes, but at least you'll still be getting some tomatoes. So just kind of keep that in mind. The smaller, more compact vegetables and greens and herbs will do well in a shady spot for you.
Yeah, I think that's all good advice, Doug. Good luck with that. Appreciate your call. And by the way, peas came to mind for early. And one advantage of early, of course, is there aren't as many leaves on the trees. And so you're probably getting a little more sun that way anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, those are great ones as well.
Well, Doug, again, thank you. Let's go to Pauline in New Berlin. Pauline, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I just was wondering if your guest had any experience growing asparagus from seed. We have three wonderful raised beds of asparagus, and we bought a package of seeds from Seed Saver Exchange and wanted to get them going.
Wow, that's
you know
the
what,
hard
Pauline,
way.
I've actually never grown asparagus. I know it grows very easily. However, it does take up a lot of space. And can take up space over a several-year period of time and take a little bit of longer time to produce. So it's one of the things I haven't, taken the time to grow in my garden. So, again, I always encourage people to experiment, try it out, do your research. Even research on YouTube, how to grow asparagus. You're going to pull up all kinds of videos. And I know it's an absolutely delicious vegetable, and it's going to taste so much better than whatever you buy at the grocery store. So go for it.
Yeah, you're looking at a long period of time from seed, because you're not going to get asparagus the first year for sure, and probably I'm not going to tell you how long, because I'm not sure off the top of my head, but it's a longer time period than if you just buy the bulbs already to put into the soil. That's for sure. You might want to go online and take a look, Pauline, at growing asparagus from seed, because I'm sure there are some tricks to that for sure. Nikki in Milwaukee emailed to ask in regards to reusing soil. She wonders if there's any sterilization to the old reused soil needed before adding the new amendments each year.
I will sterilize soil if I'm going to be bringing it inside to grow or growing it inside, but really for outdoors. And the reason for that is you don't want to bring any unwanted pests or bugs into your house that can easily get out of control. But for growing outdoors, I don't do that, because you're going to have the natural predators outside anyway. And at some point, most people have pests that come into their garden in any case during the summer months. So that's not something that I've done. If you're more comfortable sterilizing your soil, it's very easy to do. You would, even in a large quantity, you can throw your soil in a wheelbarrow and just pour some boiling water over it. It's as simple as that. It will kill the eggs or any bugs that might be in the soil. So, just do whatever you're comfortable with. If you don't want to put new soil in your garden bed without sterilizing it, then absolutely go for it.
And I guess the other thing might relate to, let's say you grew some tomatoes in a pot, and the tomatoes got a disease of some sort, you might want to make sure that the leaves or anything left over from the tomato, the diseased plant itself didn't find its way into the, or doesn't remain in the, around the soil. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. Like when you're pulling the tomato plant out at the end of the season, you would definitely want to pull that up by the roots, and then don't put it in the compost. I would put it, like, we have green bins here that get collected once a week. I just throw any diseased or really pest-infested plants in there. And then, yes, that is a case, too, where if you've got a heavily diseased plant, that you could go ahead and sterilize that soil before you reuse it from your container.
And relating to that, I guess Cal and Sugar Camp called to ask if there are any seeds that will work in soil that has had tomato blight. Well, there would be other types of vegetables that could work. Could they not, Cal?
Yes.
Kim?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. That would be a case you probably want to go ahead and sterilize your soil and then mix in your compost and amendments as you would anyway, and then go ahead and plant whatever you like in it without a problem.
You do garden organically, and, you know, disease has just come up a couple times here. How do you keep the bed free from disease? Or, you know, it's almost an impossible task sometimes, I expect, without when you're doing it organically.
Right. Well, yes, I think that's a very good point, is that disease at some point and pests at some point, I mean, let's just manage our expectations and just put it out there. We're not going to have a perfect garden. Disease and pests do come in. So I encourage people to manage your expectations, expect it to happen. And as you start gardening throughout the years, you know, keep a little garden journal of when those pests and diseases come in so you know how to deal with it. But it is possible to help control it. You're not going to probably help eradicate it, but you can help control it organically. A great thing to do for bugs is when you see those bugs first come in, spray your plants off with water. It rinses the bugs off. Sometimes they won't crawl back up. If it persists, you may need to go use an organic solution like a neem oil or some organic pest control solution. There's lots of good ones out there on the market. As far as diseases go, one of the most common in our area anyway is powdery mildew. If you live in an area of high humidity, which we don't, but high humidity, you're going to be dealing with it even more. And one of my favorite things for dealing with that is simply a milk water type solution. It's 8 or 9 parts milk. It really doesn't matter too much. I mean, 8 or 9 parts water, I'm sorry, and 1 part of milk. And something about the proteins in the milk when you spray it in direct sunlight helps control and keep the powdery mildew at bay. But there's also some organic solutions out there, you know, if you prefer to purchase a pest control or a disease control at your garden center. There's lots of good ones out there on the market as well. But it's definitely possible to control it with organic methods.
I love the garden plans that you mentioned earlier, the layouts and planting plans. Do you have a favorite?
It's so hard to pick a favorite because I like to grow so many different vegetables. But one thing I do always like to try and grow is a kitchen garden. And the very first layout I have in there is for a kitchen garden. And I always recommend that people start with that. We have a whole raised bed series on our YouTube channel where we built the raised bed from the ground up, filled it with soil, and then planted a kitchen garden in it. And we also have seed collections on our website. That's one of the ones that is the most popular is the raised bed kitchen garden seed collection. And basically what a kitchen garden is it's a garden full of vegetables that you would eat and harvest on a daily basis. So we're talking things like tomatoes, cucumbers, salad greens, herbs, peppers. You basically want to plant what your family eats. And if you have the ability to put that kitchen garden close to your house, if you have the space, by all means do so, because the closer, the better, the more apt you are to go out and harvest every day. When you're throwing veggies on the grill, you can go grab some herbs to throw on the grill and harvest your veggies. You're more apt to water it and care for it. But it's just a really good place for someone who's new to start with is just plant yourself a basic kitchen garden. Keep it simple. Get your feet wet with those first harvests, you know, build up some skills, and then you're going to be confident to go out and plant a few more. And you could maybe get into some of the theme gardens, which are a really easy way to start too, like the salsa gardens in the book, pizza garden, a pollinator's paradise, which is super important to bring all those bees and butterflies and pollinators in so you can grow a ton of vegetables. So, you know, pretty much, like I said, all of them are my favorites, but the kitchen garden is probably one that I would say, if you're going to start with one, start with that.
Well, you know, and the one other one that intrigues me, because on Garden Talk, this has come up a number of times with getting your children involved, and you have a kid's garden too, and that might be one that you could put right next to that basic kitchen garden, the kid's garden. Tell us
Absolutely.
About that.
Absolutely. I love encouraging kids to grow. And what I found is our kids are in their 20s now, but, you know, nieces and nephews that have younger kids, like get your kids involved in the garden. They are going to eat vegetables a lot more when they grow it themselves. So I've got a raised bed build that would be perfect for a child. It's a 2x4 kind of elevated raised bed. And then plant vegetables that are easy to grow, fast to grow. So they get that immediate gratification rather than waiting a really long time for a vegetable. Plant something like peas, like you mentioned, or greens. Radishes, you can grow from seed to harvest in about 3 weeks. And I always like to pop in the flowers. So in my layout for my kids' garden, I have some sunflowers in there. And then we do have a kids' garden seed collection, too, which include all those easy-to-grow veggies. So kids can plant the seeds themselves, see it grow, which is a thrill for them, and then harvest it maybe 6 to 8 weeks later. It's a lot of fun for them.
Yeah. And it's different from when you and I were kids. going out to my mom had a huge garden, too, and, you know, it looked like work, and it felt like work.
Absolutely.
But the raised bed is a nice, neat, tidy thing built at a height that the kids can easily use and watch and tend. They don't have acres.
That's right. It makes it doable and fun. And you can even have them, you know, you can build the bed and then say, hey, paint it the way you want to paint it. Paint designs on it, paint it a color that you like, you know, paint happy faces on it, whatever you like, just to get them involved. And you never know, but so many of our viewers and listeners email me saying, I'm gardening with my kids now. They're learning where food comes from. They're enjoying it. They're loving it. And what those parents are doing is setting up their kids for a lifetime of being able to produce their own food and have a skill that's very valuable, not to mention enjoyable and really good for your mental health. And hopefully their kids will carry that on down to future generations as well, which is super important.
Yeah, and also I could see a value that we have a lot of summer school programs here, and I could see that for use by schools as well.
Absolutely. In fact, I used to be a paraeducator before I became a full-time garden teacher, and I taught my kids how to grow beans in little plastic cups. And that was one of their favorite things to do every year. They got to plant their bean seeds, see the beans grow, which, you know, Larry, they grow very fast.
Yep.
And then take them home to their families. They were so excited about that.
Well, this has been a lot of fun talking with you today, Kim. I really appreciate you taking the time. And you're not only this book is just a great book. I love all the photos and the easy to follow instructions for building all types of raised beds. It really is an inviting book to look at. And of course, you've got your YouTube channel as well that I know is very popular.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry, and I really hope it encourages people to get out there and grow more vegetables.
Thanks, Kim. Callie Kim, our guest today, her book is Raised Bed Gardening, All the Know-How You Need to Build and Grow a Raised Bed Garden. Really fun having her on the show today. And her YouTube is Callie Kim Gardens Home DIY. So great to have her with us. Next week, Vijay Pandian is back to talk about, all kinds of gardening issues, the UW Extension Horticulture Agent. So we're certainly looking forward to that next week. We'll be talking about, on Monday, alternative energy sources, and we'll check in with our weather guys as well. I hope you have a great weekend, but hey, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.